Okay, so there are three prohibitions, as you can see, regarding milk and meat. And the reason why I am moving in this direction now is because, as far as keeping kosher goes, perhaps the most pervasive element of keeping a kosher kitchen is not just getting kosher ingredients. It's very easy to do that. Just stick with these symbols. But the most difficult part of keeping a kosher kitchen is the separation of milk and meat. Right? Not just the separation of kosher and non-kosher. That's very simple. Only kosher food gets into my house. But once you get to that stage, there's lots that can still go wrong. Now, most of whatever you're going to ever mix between milchiks and fleishik is going to be only prohibited midrabanan. It's very hard to violate the Torah with milchiks and fleishiks. Could be much more serious and pervasive violations of Torah with respect to eating vegetables, or especially leafy vegetables. Why? Because insect infestation, insects are, each one is a violation of the Torah. Okay, so there are lots of things to be very careful about, but we're starting with the one that's probably most pervasive and the one that takes the most effort. And just as someone who's been fielding questions for close to 40 years in kashrus, most questions that ever come to me about keeping kosher are about separation of milk and meat, which is why we're starting with that. Okay, so the first thing I want to understand, the mitzvah of the Torah. Okay, the Torah lists the prohibition in three different places. And never does it say not to eat milk and meat. It says don't cook milk and meat together. So the three references in the Torah to not cooking milk and meat together are understood by the Gemara to refer to three separate prohibitions, and each one is counted separately as one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Do not cook milk and meat together. Do not eat milk and meat that was cooked together. Do not derive benefit from milk and meat that was cooked together. Right? And since the Torah does not use the expression of eating, so the prohibition of milk and meat is going to be prohibited in a way that goes beyond other prohibitions of not eating. The Torah says, don't eat pork. Don't eat shellfish. Right? That definition is as food down your throat, right? If you can grind pork into a paste and mix in some mayonnaise and the doctor tells you that this paste is good for your rash, you could put it on your arm. Nothing wrong with that, right?
But it would be a problem if you did it with milk.
But it would be a problem if you did it with milk and meat. Why? Because the Torah didn't say don't eat milk and meat. So its prohibition goes beyond eating. Right, if there is a salve of chametz, a certain type of bread that's ground, and if you mix in a certain type of cream, and the doctor tells you that's going to do great to fix your rash on Pesach, you're allowed to do that on Pesach, even though chametz is prohibited in benefit. As long as a dog wouldn't eat this thing, you can do that. Right. Because it says in the Torah, don't eat chametz. So the prohibition is limited to food, this chametz as food going down your throat. Okay? But since the Torah didn't say don't eat milk and meat, so the prohibition goes beyond eating. Right? If you have something wrong with your toes and something about the mixture of milk and meat is good for your toes, you can't use it. You can't use it for any benefit in your body or any anything at all, right? Even though prohibitions of food usually are limited to what goes down your throat. Okay, so the reason for this is because derech bishul asra Torah, and I have to appeal to some kind of scholarship for this. The Rambam writes that there was ancient pagan rituals involving cooking milk and meat together. Milk is taken from the animal when it's alive. Meat is taken from the animal when it's dead. cooking them together is like a motif for showing I dominate the realms of life and death. So Hashem is telling us the pagans were doing this before Abraham even. You don't control life and death. When you feel that you control life and death, human beings have done very arrogant and terrible things. I control life and death. You just go about doing your regular business. Don't do these crazy rituals. Okay? Now, when the Torah mentions not cooking milk and meat, it's in the same pasuk as bringing first fruits. Bring your first fruits to the temple, lay it down before the Kohen. Don't cook milk and meat together. What is the connection? So the Rambam also writes that the ancient pagans thought that this milk and meat residue, this milk and meat production that it creates when I cook them together, can be spilled over a holy swatch of crops in the temple, whatever temple they had, and that will guarantee a good crop for the God. The gods will bless your whole country with a good crop. So you see what the Torah is saying? Don't think that you have to cook milk and meat to get a good crop. You bring your first fruits. You bring the Kohen, your first fruits, I'll bless your crops. You don't have to do these crazy rituals like cooking milk and meat together. Okay, the Torah is not a horticulturist guide. It's a moral code. Right? You follow my mitzvahs, I'll take care of you. So it's derech bishul asra Torah. Eating a cheese and bologna sandwich does not violate the Torah. Only if they're melted together does it violate the Torah. Okay?
What do you mean like?
It has to be like a, no, it has to be like a cheese in heat. It has to be cooked. Lo sevashel. It has to be cooked together. Okay? So I must tell you that Karaites, for instance, who only take the literal meaning of the Torah, so it never says don't eat milk and meat together. They just refrain from cooking it together. Right? So how do Karaites understand the mitzvah? So Rashi amazingly explains the pasuk close to the way the Karaites do. They think that lo sevashel gedi b'chalev imo, that imo refers to Mother Earth. The mother is a tree. The kid is the fruit of the tree. And lo sevashel, don't let it become ripe on the tree and fall to the ground. You should pick it and bring it as your first fruits. You get it? Reishis b'kriyat masachot v'ibes Hashem Elokecha. Bring your first fruits to the temple. Lo sevashel gdi b'chalei b'mo. Don't let the fruit ripen on the tree and fall to the ground. Pick it yourself before it falls to the ground and bring it to the temple. That's how they understand this. So they eat milk and meat together. They don't accept the Torah Shebaal Peh. Without Torah Shebaal Peh, what do we have? Right? Okay, so there's three different mitzvahs here from the oral tradition. Don't cook it together, don't eat it together, and don't derive benefit of them together. Okay, now what we derive from this is that one last thing we have to do in the pshat is, why does it say a goat? Don't cook a goat in its mother's milk. Are we allowed to cook calf meat? Are we allowed to cook beef with milk? Are we allowed to cook lamb with milk? So of course, you know what the halacha is. Let me just give you the guidelines. There are three kosher behemos on planet Earth. Just three. Goat, sheep, cow. That's it. It's the only kosher behemos. There are seven kosher chayos on planet Earth. A little debate about what they are. They're mostly the moose, deer, gazelle, giraffe, bison. So there are seven kosher chayos in the world. So you only have 10 possible meats and 10 possible milks to mix. Well, we're going to take seven and seven off the table, because it's only the milk and meat of behemos that are included in this mitzvah. It's a goat. Goat is emblematic of the sheep and the cow. Why mention goat? So this is an interesting statistic. A goat's ratio of its weight to the milk it gives is much greater than a cow's. Hear that again? A goat by weight gives a lot more milk than a cow does by weight. So the Torah is just saying, well, was a common thing to do in the ancient world. They took it from a kid. A kid is a young goat. But it's true about cow milk, right? So you can figure it out. It's A, B, C. Cow, beef, lamb, goat. And milk of cow, milk of goat, milk of lamb, right? Only the possible mixtures of those six is what's forbidden by the Torah. Okay? All other mixtures, namely cow milk with deer meat, or chicken for that matter, goat milk with giraffe meat, or gazelle milk with beef, none of those violate the Torah. Okay? But there is a middle section here. There is a middle section. The only thing that can violate the Torah is, get this, get it clear, cow milk with beef, goat, or lamb, goat milk with beef, goat, or lamb, or goat milk with beef, goat, or lamb. Right? That's the only way to violate the Torah with milk and meat. But the thing is that midrabanan, we all know this. Midrabanan, we treat all meat the same. Not allowed to eat chicken with milk either. Midrabanan, rabbinic.
Initially, chicken was viewed as wild, was it? And then they changed and they said no, it's not.
There is an interesting scholarship on this in the Middle Ages. The prohibition of having chicken with milk at the same time cooked together, that's mentioned in the Mishnah and the Gemara. To wait 6 hours after eating chicken, or wait 2 or 3 hours or 1 hour, however long, we'll talk about that, is from later, not from the Gemara. Okay, but let me get just back to this point, is that rabbinic prohibition says all 10 meats, right, that's 7 kosher chayos, right? You can't have bison with cream, even though it's drabanan to do so. You can't cook bison with milk and eat it, right? And you can't have a bison or deer meat, venison and cheese sandwich. You can't have that. But it would only violate the drabanan, again, because only behema meat and milk is forbidden by the Torah. Behema meat and behema milk, for that matter. Behema meat with deer milk is also not a violation of the Torah. Even cooking them together. Now, here's an important point. And I've had this. I've had a French chef who converted to Judaism. He was one of the top French chefs in New York. And you know that French cooking has a lot of cheese. Right? So he's not allowed to cook beef with cheese. Right? So we arranged it for him that he would only have to cook non-beef lamb or goat with cheese meals. Other chefs would cook those things. But he was able to keep his job because, and this is very important, there's one level that which violates the Torah that can only be three behemos meat with a possible combination of three behemos milk. Fine? Eating the milk and the meat combinations are forbidden for all 10. Right? Got it? Parenthetically, the Torah only speaks of 7 kosher chayos. Right? They just gave you a smattering of them. Today, there might be a 50 or 60 kosher chayos on planet Earth. If you go to the first floor of the Museum of Natural History, you'll see like 30 kosher chayos. They're all kosher, that whole row. Everything, practically everything down there in the back, except in the front, they have some lions, I think. But in the back, because over the years, especially in America, they've interbred and they create new, all kinds of, they're like 10 types of gazelles and they're all kinds of animals with horns and they all chew their cud and they all have the hooves. But there might be more than 7 kosher chayos in the world. Anyway, you are allowed to, lechatchila, it's not even prohibited midrabbana, only rabbinic prohibitions, if you're not kosher behema or kosher behema meat or kosher behema milk, prohibitions is on eating. But you're allowed to cook those things and you're allowed to derive benefit from it, which is why we allowed that French chef to continue working in his position, because he only cooked the chicken and turkey, the fowl, the duck with cheese, and or the venison with cheese, or the bison with cheese. He was never given beef, lamb, or goat to cook with cheese, because that would be a violation of the Torah. Right? The only violation outside of the Torah is not to eat certain combinations. Okay, I'm going on. So this, what I just told you, is pretty much everything here on page... on page 25, right, and 25 and 26, okay, and 27 and 28. Okay. Right, now you have to be very careful. On page 28, there is some very interesting, let's see if I can move. Okay. You see it says, Yalkut Yosef, Yeridei, is he what I'm just turning to? Okay. So he says you have to be very careful with some of these things, because if you have in your garbage can or you have outside in your trash can or something, you have some milk and some meat, and you pour boiling water over them, you could be cooking the milk and meat together like that. You have to be careful. Right? Now, what can you do in a microwave? Can you use the same microwave for meat and milk? So, technically, yes. If you have a microwave at work and it's not a kosher environment, what you can do is warm up your pastrami sandwich as long as you double wrap it. Because that microwave is probably treif. Now, if at home you have one microwave and you want to use it for milchiks and fleishiks, something very simple, you can do, always cover it. So your food is never in the open. Right? Always just cover it. Cover it with something, you know, fully in the bag, or cover it on all sides with a paper towel or something. All right? So as such, then the walls of that microwave never absorb any milk and never absorb any meat. Okay? But if a microwave within 24 hours absorbs both milk and meat, you even if you don't ever eat that stuff, you've created the problem by cooking the milk and meat together. See it? Right?
But depends on the last. Some are shrinking, they wouldn't do that. And those are
yeah, it's true. It's better not to. Two of them are only use it for one, milchiks or fleishiks. I'm yeah, just telling you. Yeah. Okay, but the thing is, though, when we're talking about a microwave that's unkosher, a treif is regularly made in it, then you need two covers.
But wouldn't it go to the paper towel? Because my get wet because of the paper, and because it's hot also.
And maybe that, then in some cases like that, you might need two to go through the one, but it won't go through the second. But if your experience is that, be careful. Okay. All right. So now we've made an extra prohibition of not only not eating them together, like a cold bologna and cheese sandwich. No, we do better than that. We say that after eating meat, we shouldn't eat milk for a certain amount of time. Now, the original Gemara that talks about this says not to eat milk and meat in the same meal. Okay? Not to eat milk and meat in the same meal, no matter how much time elapses. Right? But if you finish your meal and you wash your mouth out, Tosfos holds in Maseches Chulin that you can have dairy right away. Okay? But we don't paskin that way. Let me tell you why. Because Rashi and the Rambam said not to do that, Rashi's grandson, Rabbi Tam, who says you just have to make a new meal. I mean, after all, the Torah law is not to cook them together and eat them together. Right? So I understand we shouldn't eat a bologna and cheese sandwich that's cold. I didn't cook them, right? That would be a violation of Rabbanan. I'm not going to do that. But if I finished my sandwich, I finished my pastrami sandwich, why can't I have a little yogurt afterwards? I'm not eating them together. So that's Rashi. Rashi says because it has to do with digestion. The Ksava Kabbalah explains Rashi that if you eat milk in a time that's shortly within a certain amount of time of eating meat, your stomach is cooking them together. The juices of the stomach, which is very acidic, and it's like mamish, but boiling in there, right? It's burning it, right? So if you eat dairy within a certain time of meat, they're getting cooked in your body together. Now, the opposite, however, is not true. Because after you eat a glass of milk or a spoon of ice cream or a little yogurt, that digests very quickly. Therefore, you can have meat shortly, much more quickly after that than vice versa. Right? Okay. However, the Rambam gives a different reason for separating milk and meat with time. He said that's to do with the teeth. Hear this?
Right?
When you eat meat, meat gets stuck in the teeth a lot more than any dairy product. Okay, stomach. Cheese doesn't really get stuck in your teeth. Yeah, you can floss everything out and still we wait 6 hours. Tell me why.
Because it's in our stomach.
Because of Rashi, exactly. Exactly. Because of Rashi. In other words, each one might have a difference. For instance, someone chewed meat, but before they swallowed it, spit it out. You wouldn't have to wait 6 hours for Rashi because it's not in your stomach. But you would have to wait 6 hours for the Rambam because it's in your teeth. Or imagine a different difference. Chicken soup.
What if they don't have teeth? What if they have fake teeth? And you just go, you know.
Well, the meat is there. If you have no teeth at all. You take the teeth out. Is the same thing as eating chicken soup. Chicken soup does not get between your teeth.
But it
has the flavor and it gets in the stomach. Right? So we wait 6 hours for Rashi's reason, independent of the Rambam. Right? Digestion, but even if it doesn't go in your teeth because you don't have them, or because you ate a food that doesn't get between your teeth. Or we paskin like the Rambam, independent of Rashi. I got between my teeth, but I didn't swallow it. I ended up spitting it out. Okay.
What if they want everything? And what if they have fake teeth? And this is
fake teeth also can have the meat still there. The meat is there. But we assume that after 6 hours, if there's still meat between your teeth, then it ceases to be considered meat.
No, I'm saying if they have two dentures, let's say they use two dentures. One for
I know some people who do that.
And let's say they
wanted it,
then they have
like this. Yeah, I don't know. Zero. Okay, so now there was a person in the Gemara named Mar Ukva, right? That's right here. You see him? He talks about his father who used to wait 24 hours. He would wait 24 hours after meat to eat dairy. Right? Now, where do 6 hours come in? Who just said six? Why not seven? Why not 9 hours? Why not 4 hours?
Because they found that that's how much it takes for really to digest the meat.
Okay. That might be subjective. It might be the kind of meat that you're eating. It would be how
well.
So the Rambam says to wait kishesh shavs, which translates like about 6 hours or into the sixth hour. You ever hear of that rule? The Lecha Mishnah mentions that opinion and says that that's a misreading of the Rambam. The Rambam meant to say kishesh shaos, because it is 6 hours, like the time between two meals. Gemara's original law was in two separate meals. Okay? So,
so if you have a meal like a half hour later, then unless you
want to
say no, because
you need
breakfast, lunch,
and dinner. So that's the explanation is that the Gemara in Pesachim says, how often should you eat meals? And it says every 6 hours. There you go. Now you see why German Jews wait 3 hours. Because Germans, I don't know if it's true about all Germans, but German Jews ate often. There was a German man in the shul, and he said that his mother used to send him to school with sandwiches, and you ate a sandwich every three hours. They say that's actually healthier to eat less more often than to eat like a pig, just one time a day. It's much healthier to just eat less every 2 hours. Yeah.
And also that when you get up from a meal, that you should not get up full, then you should still be hungry when you get up.
Right. Okay, so then there isn't even another minute of waiting 1 hour. But the minute come to wait 1 hour. So that minute is Kabbalistic. Because the Zohar says that you should never have milk and meat within the same hour. The Ramah cites that halacha. Don't eat milk and meat within the same hour. That means that if you had dairy at 1 o'clock, you shouldn't eat meat until 2 o'clock, because otherwise you'd be eating dairy and meat in the same hour. It doesn't say which one first, right? So that's Kabbalistic kind of configuration. However, there are some people in Europe, Dutch Jews, wait 1 hour. Okay. So what does someone do when they get married? The general principle is that the woman follows the custom of the husband. But it's important that they don't run around with different minhagim. You can't have a household like that. Right? If the husband chooses to take the minhag of his wife, it's sometimes legitimate. Okay. So basically you have 1 hour, 3 hours, into the fifth hour, the majority of the fifth hour, that's 5 hours and 31 minutes, and then 6 hours and then 24 hours. Those are basically kind of the opinions of how long different people wait. Some say, but Dafka, I'm not going to relax on 6 hours. It's 6 hours. My children are going to know that as soon as they're old enough to know that they're between milk and meat, because they'll know that that's not negotiable, and that's the way we eat in the rice. Okay.
Did 24 hours originate because of Shabbat and Yom Tov?
Okay, so the Rambam Paskins that what makes you have to wait 6 hours is any kind of meat. You wait 6 hours after chicken, after turkey. Okay. Right. So Lecha Mishnah is the one who says that the Rambam did not mean, this is source number 7. I'm sorry, source number 12. The Rambam did not mean to say that we have to wait like almost 6 hours, or into the sixth hour. Now, Rambam meant to say that we wait the amount of time like Tam Chacham used to eat two meals, one at 12 o'clock and one at 6 o'clock. Okay. All right, so the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, this is source number 15. Okay. See it? Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam. All right. So you have to wait 6 hours, according to the Rambam and the Torah. So according to the halacha, Shulchan Aruch says, as soon as you finished your meal and you washed your hands and you washed out your mouth, then you can have milk. But he says that the custom is to wait an hour in between meat and dairy. And yet, he says, that's the custom. Wow. Not just in Holland, but in wherever. Where my mother lived in Krakow. So, Ramos says, but it's the better thing to do is to wait for 6 hours, and that's pretty much the custom, okay. Right? What happens if you waited 6 hours and then you find you see that you have a whole piece of meat inside your between your teeth? It's okay. After 6 hours, it's no longer considered meat. Okay. Okay. All right. So what are exceptions to this rule? Look at page 33. Yes, we all know the halacha now.
Rabbi, can you repeat your comment about the cold?
See, the question they're starting to ask now is, are there some exceptions to this rule? Sometimes what we're going to say, yes, even though it's not 6 hours, you can have this meat. Okay. So one of the questions is, let's say you had meat at 1 o'clock. Right? And at 2 o'clock, you saw a piece of chocolate. You picked up chocolate and started making a bracha, bracha to Hashem, and you say Hashem's name, okay, the Melech HaOlam. And then just before you said Shakoni Midvaro, you realized, oh no, I can't eat this. I just had fleshik an hour ago. What do you think? Should you finish the bracha and take a quick bite? Because making a bracha that you didn't need to make is a violation of the Torah. Bracha Shein
Tzvicha. It
needs
to happen. It's only music, so you can switch
it to
something else.
Yeah, so if you say Bracha Tosham Akenamel, and then you, all of a sudden you hear lightning, you say, okay, you see lightning, you say, okay, Osama Sebrachus. Bracha goes after its ending. But in this case, I'm sort of stuck. I made the Bracha, I've started making the Bracha already. And if I don't finish it, I'm in the Bracha for nothing.
So I guess maybe it's
so what do you think? Eat it?
You eat better than
Rahalavatara than eat it, because I guess the prohibition is more. Let's see. Page 33, responsa Chavadas, number 20. See it down here. Okay. One ate meat, meaning he has to wait 6 hours, right, before being able to eat dairy. Then forgot after an hour, and he said a bracha on a piece of chocolate. Can you finish the bracha and eat the chocolate? So the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rif, the Rambam, the Rosh, that you need to wait 6 hours. So he answers, our master, the Shulchan Aruch, rules in accordance with the Rif, Rambam, and Rosh, that those who follow, and those that follow them, that one need to wait 6 hours between meat and dairy. And the Rambam writes, the accepted custom of the countries of Ashkenaz is to wait only 1 hour between meat and dairy, a condition that one decides to go as a Muslim. Then it's considered like another meal. One day a year, we seem to violate this on Shavuos. If you see that some people have the custom of having two different challahs on the night of Shavuos for the Shtei HaLechem, the two bread, showbreads that they bring in the Beis Mikdash. So, but if you eat one loaf of bread with milchix for the minhag, and then you eat the next loaf of bread with fleishix, right? Because it's Yantif and Ein Simcha Ela B'Basar, you want to rejoice on the holiday with meat, right? So You have to be careful with the invention between.
So you can give them separate.
Right, because otherwise it's the same meal. It doesn't matter if they've been there 10 hours apart. It's the same meal, you can't do that.
Well, but if you were not eating bread, then you could have ice cream, rinse your mouth, and then you can eat meat, no? Because you don't have to, you know, you could just do the same meal. You could have both, but you just
miss
your mouth, but I guess because
it's also... Yeah, Marukra said they should not ever be in the same meal. So that was the difference. Okay, so you have to be careful about that, especially if not if she was.
But if you serve the ice cream first, it's fine, right? It's not that if you eat ice cream first and then you rinse your mouth and then after that you go have a piece of cake, it's fine. But it would be different on Shavuot because you eat bread.
So here is the upshot of this, is that this is obviously a bit d'evit situation. It's after the fact. I made a bracha, I don't want to make a bracha at all. So let me just, because don't forget, the Ramah said you only have to wait an hour. Let's say this person is already waiting an hour or two when you made this mistake. Right? If it was only 5 minutes later, you probably don't have too much recourse. But in other words, you say, okay, I'll finish the bracha. I'll save myself a bracha shenitricha, the bracha that wasn't necessary. And I'll just, this one time, I'll take a bite, even though I just had this an hour ago. So in summary, look at page 34. You see here? One who ate meat and recited the broth on dairy products within hours should take a small amount in order to come not be in vain. Take a little, so it shouldn't be bracha levatala. The Rambam paskins that if you make a bracha that you didn't need to make, it's a violation of the Torah in itself. So this person knows, I'm about to make a bracha labatala, what am I going to do? All right, eat the thing. Not a violation of the Torah. But Rav Moshe Levy, author of the series Menuchas Ahava and Berachas Hashem, he says that if you already made the bracha, all right, don't taste dairy food. Just finish the bracha. That's it. It's bracha shel tzvicha, maybe. But just finish the food.
So that's how he passed him?
Yeah, he says it's written for him to taste any other.
Because then the other ones.
Yeah. So Rav Moshe Sternbach in Tshuva from Hagos, this is an interesting psak for Ashkenazi. He said that it depends. If you were eating this in the first hour, right, you're within the first hour, where everybody agrees that you have to wait at least an hour. Right? If you were in your first hour, right, then... Because an hour, you would be violating the Torah if you read it. Come on. Within the hour. But only after an hour, if you already waited an hour, you can fit into the Ramah for that. The Ramah said you only wait an hour anyway. So if it's past an hour and you made the bracha, okay, if I had that custom, I'd be able to eat now. I'd be able to eat the dairy now. Because it's been more than an hour. Okay. Right, the minute of waiting into the sixth hour, which is page 35, the Lechem Mishnah says that's not such a common minute. The preferable minute is to wait the full 6 hours. Right? Some are lenient. You said this now, Sefer Kashrus. Right, to eat dairy after meat once the majority of the sixth hour has passed. Ravadi Yosef says that wading into the sixth hour is only for fowl, not for beef or lamb or goat. Okay? But don't do this wading into the sixth hour for meat. It's only for chicken. Okay? It can sometimes be a problem in yeshivas where they serve food because they have every day like a dinner at 6 o'clock. But sometimes lunch goes well past 12 o'clock and it's a flesh of lunch.
Stern doesn't have a problem because they're already serving lunch and dinner.
Okay.
What?
I remember the yeshivas, they would serve dinner like 6 o'clock and lunch was over like 1:15 sometimes. If you had fleishiks for lunch and milchiks for dinner, it's a problem. Rather, many of the students wait only 3 hours, but many of them are. Okay. If you look at the bottom of page 37, it says here in this part, it says, Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu ruled that yeshiva students who would not be able to wait 6 whole hours unless they changed their learning schedule should still wait 6 complete hours even if their learning is disrupted. Okay, you have to wait 6 actual hours, not 6 halachic hours. What do you mean by that? 6 halachic hours means... 6 halachic hours means the amount of daylight minutes divided by 12. So an hour now in the winter has, like as we come into the winter, has many fewer minutes. In the winter, you can get down to like 45 minutes per hour. In the summer, an hour has 75 minutes. And again, the daylight minutes divided by 12.
But in practice, people don't do that, no? They only take 6 hours. Because otherwise it'll be too hard. And, you know, you have to be able to learn to know how to calculate.
Okay. So, number 29, at the bottom of page 38. This is... Book of the Laws of Kashrus. He says that the vast majority of Jews wait 6 hours. Right? And the post can say 6 full hours.
Yes.
He said the one must wait 6 hours and an hour. It's amazing. Some posts can say that 5 hours and 31 minutes is enough. So the question is, when do you start counting the 6 hours?
When it's finished.
So that's what it says in page 39. From eating the meal or the end of the meal? From eating meat or the end of the meal? Because you can have a meal that goes on from 1 to 3. You finished eating meat at 2 and you benched at 3.
No, so you go by when you finish eating the meat.
Is it from the time, well, some say because it's a difference of din in the meal. So it's from the time, because you see, to wait 6 hours from the end of the meal is a double chumrah. You see why? Because if it's a question of the meal, it shouldn't be in the same meal. Then Rabbi Tom said, as soon as you finish that meal, wash out your mouth, brush your teeth, eat a piece of bread or something, and then you can have dairy already. Right? As long as it's not in the same meal, the way that there could be a chumrah is if someone has a meal that extends for 8 hours, 10 hours. Same meal, he keeps eating. You know, it never stops. If you go less than 72 minutes, you know, between snacks, between your eating, because your meal is going on all day. At that meal, you cannot have both milchiks and fleishiks. Even if you started with fleishiks at 1 p.m. and then you had the same meal, you haven't benched yet. You ate every 15 minutes, and at the end. You want to have some dairy. You can't because you have to bench first.
But that's not a problem if you actually eat bread, you know? Because
yeah.
If you didn't eat bread, then it's
not. Yeah, okay. So if you see, it's a double chumrah to require 6 hours from the end of the meal. If you're going to do the end of the meal, then you can eat dairy right after you bench. Okay. All right. So you have those two different opinions. Okay. And that's why CVC Sefer Kashrut on page 40. It says Sefer Kashrut also rules that one may begin a dairy meal within 6 hours of eating meat, as long as one does not actually eat dairy yet. See the opposite side? Right? You're going to have a main of macaroni and cheese, but what comes out first is a fruit cup, and then a small fish setting. So is even though you know the new meal started, but I'm not having the milk part of the meal until later. So the same is true the other end. If I started a meat meal at 12 o'clock and I stopped eating meat at 12:30, but I didn't bench till 1:30, I don't have to wait 6 hours from 1:30. I have to wait 6 hours from 12:30 when I stopped eating. Okay, what's the custom of waiting 3 hours? Because in Germany, they were eating so much more often. You get it? It's a function of the new meal. So if their meals were every 3 hours, okay, that's all you have to wait. Okay, I think we're going to stop here. The reasons for waiting between meat and dairy we discussed already, so that we don't have to do. The reasons are teeth and digestion. Right? And they're mutually inclusive. I should say exclusive. In other words, each reason applies by itself, even if the other one doesn't apply. Right? You didn't chew the meat, but it went into your digestion. Or you did chew it, but you then never swallowed it. So both of those would have to be waived. And then the question, the last question is on page 46 is, must children wait as well between meat and dairy? And the answer is, every family has to know its own dynamic, but it's the post can all say that it's of the essence that children grow. And as soon as they can tell the difference between milk and meat, that they grow knowing, I have to separate these two. Otherwise, when are you going to start? Okay. And you can have, I remember a child who has a temper tantrum, he opened up the freezer and he sees a Haagen-Dazs ice cream, he must have it, screaming and screaming, kicking and screaming, and the parent says, you can't have ice cream, you just had a piece of bologna 15 minutes ago. So the child knows, okay, it's not negotiable. Milk's inflation is not negotiable in this house. If I'm fleishig, if I have fleishig within a certain amount of time, I'm not having milk's. Okay, we'll continue next time with, there's a question about what happens if you're not sure if the right amount of time has passed. You don't remember when you ate, and now you're out with friends and they're all eating ice cream and you want to join them. Okay, so we will we'll talk about that, and then we'll also discuss the fake cheese and the fake meat and things like that. This is some really, really big questions now about pork and right, they're making things to taste like all kinds of foods today. Okay, everybody. An hour went very quickly. We're going to turn next time to page. We're going to have the review. There's a review on page 52 and 53. So now you all have it. And it's a shame that we'll continue next time with that. Page 50. Okay. All right, everybody. Have a great day.